Support for WPR comes from Tomorrow River Community Virtual School, delivering Waldorf-inspired live virtual lessons to grades 4K through 8th, open to all Wisconsin students. More is at trcvs.org.
Support for WPR comes from Doulaying the Doula, offering birth and postpartum training and certification programs for medical professionals and other interested humans. More information about training is at doulaworkshop.com.
Is it the end of the road for coal-fired power plants? Well, that's the big question this week on the Joy Cardin program. John Munson in for Joy Cardin. 9 more coal-fired power plants have recently been scheduled for retirement, and there are more to come, according to the Environmental Protection Agency. We're going to talk about new EPA regulations and booming natural gas production in terms of what that means for coal. And we invite you to weigh in on this week's big question. Should coal continue to play a significant part in the nation's future energy plans? We'll ask what you think about that this hour on the Joy Cardin program. My guest is Michael Kraft, Professor Emeritus of Public and Environmental Affairs at UW Green Bay. Professor, welcome to the Joy Cardin program.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Well, this issue doesn't capture huge headlines, but there have been some developments. The EPA has announced last fall new air quality standards for coal-burning power plants, and there have been a number of announcements of closures of plants or plants that are scheduled to be closed. It's going to be more difficult to build new plants, a lot more expensive. What's going on here?
Well, what's going on, I guess, at heart is a long-term transition away from reliance on coal. The rules you refer to are called the MATS, or mercury and air toxic rules, that have been something like 20 years in the making. That alone will lead to closures of many older plants. Some of these coal-fired power plants are over 50 years old, and they just cannot economically be adjusted to meet the new standards. Beyond the MATS, the mercury and lead and other air toxics issue, there are two things going on, and this has to do with climate change or greenhouse gas emissions. And that is the Obama administration, because it cannot get support in Congress for climate change policy to reduce greenhouse gases, is doing it administratively. So the EPA is on the firing line. EPA is developing two different rules, one for new coal-fired power plants and the other for existing power plants. These will both impose significant restrictions on the amount of carbon that coal-burning power plants can emit. Beyond that, what's going on is the abundance of natural gas. Everybody's heard about natural gas fracturing or fracking, and natural gas has become much more abundant and cheaper. So we've had, for example, the Kewaunee nuclear power plant in Wisconsin closed because the nuclear plant could not compete with natural gas. In many cases, coal plants cannot do so either. When you put it all together, we're looking at the toxic chemical emissions from coal plants, we're looking at greenhouse gas emissions, we're looking just at the economic competitiveness of what are often 30, 40, 50-year-old coal plants that are using old technology. They just can't compete. And in some ways, I guess if you work for the coal industry or an old coal-fired power plant, this would not be good news. On the other hand, for a lot of people, this would be very good news. We're making a transition to a cleaner energy economy. According to the EPA, this will create many new jobs and new technologies will be developed to meet the new standards. So it's not a dire forecast from my perspective, but it's a change that's been a long time coming, but one that will be hurtful in some states more than others.
Wisconsin has a lot of coal-fired energy.
Yeah, nationwide, as far as I've been able to determine, about 40% of electricity comes from burning coal. In Wisconsin, it's 65%. In some states like Kentucky, Ohio, and Missouri, it's closer to 90%. So in states that are very heavily dependent on coal plants, it's going to be a more difficult transition. And Wisconsin would be one of those, particularly since we already lost the Kewaunee nuclear plant. So it means that natural gas will replace coal. Coal-burning power plants often have multiple facilities at one site, and there may be a gradual transition there, but it will be a significant change. On the plus side, you know, we always think of regulations, at least some people do, as imposing a lot of harm and cost, but the flip side of that is when you remove mercury and other air toxics and you reduce carbon pollution, there are many societal benefits as well. And the EPA, of course, adds all that up. And from its perspective, there are many, many more benefits than costs. So it's well worth moving in this direction if you believe the EPA economic analysis. So it's not all bad news, but it will be a difficult transition in many states, and including Wisconsin.
We're already seeing some upward pressure on the price of natural gas. I mean, natural gas is relatively inexpensive now compared to other energy sources, but we can't really expect that to continue either, can we?
Well, you know, this, of course, is, no one needs to be reminded, this has been an unusually cold and long winter, and that's one reason for the pressure on natural gas prices. But natural gas fracturing has been spreading around the country, and there are many, many new wells being opened. So I think the next, you know, 5 to 10 years look pretty good for natural gas, and that will ease the transition away from coal. And it also opens the possibility. Of course, we're talking only about fossil fuels, but, you know, wind power, solar power, and other new technologies may be developed to eventually replace coal. You know, 100 years from now, people may wonder why we ever burn coal to produce electricity. So we're on the verge of a really massive energy transition to move toward renewable sources and reduce, you know, release of greenhouse gases linked to climate change. And I know there are people out there who remain skeptical, but climate change is real and something has to be done about it. We've delayed far too long already. And so the transition away from coal is part of a larger need related to climate change, but also just related to the fact that burning coal produces some very dirty air and people's health will improve greatly once those chemicals are no longer emitted into the air.
Well, let's go back and talk about the new EPA standards for just a moment. What's the timetable on implementation for those standards?
Well, the EPA announced the draft regulation for new coal-fired power plants last September. And drafts, following release of a draft, there are comments and a revision to produce a final rule. That's not going to be so much the contentious one. It's the rule for existing coal-fired power plants. That's to be issued in June of 2014. But now here's what's interesting in regard to the question of implementation. Word has it, and the New York Times has had several long articles on this, the EPA is likely, it seems, to follow a recommendation by some outside organizations to give the states considerable flexibility in how they implement the new law. And some states, one would guess states like Wisconsin and Ohio and Kentucky, states that are heavily dependent on coal will have many, many options about how to reach the final desired state of affairs. They may take more time. They may have offsetting requirements. For example, if they can generate more electricity from renewable energy, they may be allowed to continue the coal-fired power plants for longer. So it is clearly EPA's intent to provide a great deal of flexibility state by state, and this is under the Clean Air Act. This new the rule for existing coal-fired power plants will come under a provision that gives the states the right to implement the policy, not the federal government. And so there'll be a lot of variation by states, and many will think that a good thing. So states that are heavily dependent on coal will have more choices. They can turn to natural gas. They can turn to renewable energy. They can have more time to make the transition depending on the local circumstances in the state. EPA is also trying very hard to meet with all the parties. They've had meetings all across the country. They've met with industry and environmental groups and consumer groups. They're trying to develop what's often called a sort of litigation-proof regulation, because the last thing EPA wants is to be sued over the final rule and then spend 4 or 5 years in the court. So they are trying very hard to meet all the objections that could be raised so that the regulation can withstand a litigation, presumably by the coal industry and the electricity-generating industry. I think we're going to be surprised if the EPA does this. It's not the image of the EPA that many have in mind, that they issue draconian regulations and are absolutely rigid in the way they are applied. I don't see this the rule on existing coal-fired power plants as being like that at all. Of course, people will differ in their assessment of the EPA just as they do on about climate change.
We need to take a break. We'll come back and continue our discussion with Professor Kraft about coal-fired power plants and their future. A reminder, this week's Big Question poll is available for you to vote on the Joy Cardine Show page at WPR.org/Cardine. Should coal continue to play a significant part in the nation's future energy plans? You can vote in our poll. We'll release the results at the end of the hour. We're talking about the future of coal-fired power plants in the United States. There are new regulations in the pipeline, and natural gas is relatively cheap right now. Some are saying that the coal-fired power plant is going the way of the dinosaur. I'm John Munson, in for Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This week's big question, is it the end of the road for coal-fired power plants? Michael Kraft, Professor Emeritus of Public and Environmental Affairs at UW Green Bay, joins me this hour to talk about the future of coal as a fuel to generate electricity here in the United States. There are new rules coming out from the EPA, both about what new power plants will have to do and what old power plants will have to also conform to as well. And the price of natural gas, also a piece of this equation. And so here's a chance for you to get in on this question at 800-642-1234. Do you support or oppose EPA limits on carbon emissions from power plants? Is coal a viable fuel to meet U.S. energy needs, or should more emphasis be placed on cleaner energy like natural gas? What questions do you have about coal, natural gas, or EPA regulations? 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. That's a toll-free number. You can also join us via email, talk@WPR.org, or find the Joy Cardine Show on Facebook and leave your comment or question there. We had a caller from Baldwin, Willem, couldn't hang on, but he said part of the conversation should be about how this would involve frack sand mines and removing huge parts of the environment. You talked, Professor, about how we're fracking for natural gas.
Yeah.
In Wisconsin, there's a pretty big issue with frack sand mining. I guess as my old environmental studies professor used to tell me, you can never do one thing when it comes to the environment.
Right. Wisconsin supplies a great deal of sand used in fracking, and there have been controversies and efforts in the state legislature to deal with the local consequences of frack sand mining, the dust and the trucks coming and going to transport the sand. So, you know, and you're right, you can never do just one thing, and any source of energy we choose, we could have the cleanest solar energy and windmills, and there are people who say, but you're affecting endangered species, or the windmills may kill bats and birds. Whatever energy source you use has consequences, and what we really need to do is to compare across many different criteria, cost and effectiveness and public health effects and climate change effects, every one of the major energy sources we have. So in some ways, people may say nuclear is better than coal. We should build more nuclear plants. And there are others who would fault nuclear plants on a number of grounds. So no, there's no one perfect source of energy. What I think we'd all like to see is an even greater abundance of sources. That is, let's get some technological research going on. Let's, you know, double down on what we're spending on research so we can come up with something better. There are, for example, fusion research projects underway globally, and some still hold out the hope that eventually we will have cheap and abundant fusion energy. That may not happen for another generation, but this is the time to start looking at those kinds of possibilities. In the meantime, we're looking at coal, oil, natural gas, and of course, wind and solar and other alternatives, and nuclear power. And for electricity generation, it's predominantly natural gas, coal, and nuclear. And Wisconsin, as I noted earlier, is very heavily dependent on coal, and maybe that will change as natural gas declines in price. What the EPA is trying to do is basically prod the country to start moving in that direction, less reliance on coal. and increasing reliance on natural gas, which produces about half the greenhouse gas emissions of coal. Ultimately, natural gas is a fossil fuel tool, too, and we'd have to move away from heavy reliance on natural gas towards something that's more renewable.
We're starting to get some calls. Let's take one. Ken in Delta, you'll be first. Ken, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I just want to say I'm a believer in climate change, but what gets me upset is we have right in Minnesota, Excelsior Energy, the newest technology available to burn coal. They crack off biodiesel and biogas that we can put right in our fuel tanks, and the Minnesota Public Service Commission will not give them a contract to sell power. Time magazine even wrote an article on this plant. It's the newest technology available, but yet nothing is said about it, and the Public Service Commission won't give it a contract to sell power. And it just upsets me a little bit.
Professor, do you know anything about that plant?
I'm afraid I do not. It sounds surprising. If what Ken says is correct, I don't understand what the objection would be on the part of the state of Minnesota. Is it because the plant does not meet some existing regulatory requirement?
I can only imagine that the existing coal plants don't want competition because whatever power they sell, the big other companies won't be able to. But there's $10 million of federal money. Time magazine had a beautiful article about it, and it's wonderful.
I'd have to look that up. I would just say, obviously, one industry that would be very much opposed to the new EPA regulations would be the coal industry. But, the coal industry by itself cannot stop a state unless it's enormously politically powerful, and I would be surprised if that were the case in Minnesota. I could see it in Kentucky or West Virginia. The coal industry would have to raise some other kind of objection that would be legal to block the issuing of a permit for a new plant.
Well, let's talk about, Ken mentioned that the latest coal-burning technology. Let's talk about some of these new technologies. Yeah. Now, there's one that is called capture and store. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, yeah, I knew that question would come up eventually. So one solution that we haven't talked about so far with reliance on coal or so-called clean coal technologies. And there are a variety of ways of doing that, but one is to capture the carbon that's released when you burn any fossil fuel and to store it, particularly to store it underground. And there are some pilot plants around the country and some experiments taking place, but to my knowledge, it's the carbon capture and sequestration or storage is not yet viable economically. So the question is, not is it technically possible to do it, but can we do it at a cost that makes such a plant competitive with, for example, natural gas? Because the industry is not going to build so-called clean coal plants if they cost far more than other sources, or they would be quickly become non-competitive. So there are those who hold out the hope that clean coal technology will allow us to continually rely on coal, and that may come about as well. That is certainly something worth study and worth support to see if we can find some way to capture and store the carbon. And there are pilot projects underway across the country to see if we can't do that.
Let's take a call next from Matt in Sparta. Matt, good morning. Hello, Matt. Oh, here we go. Now we got you. Matt, good morning. Matt, are you there? Yep, I can hear you. Go ahead.
My question is, why is the EPA focusing so much on coal and not as much on, say, infrastructure for hybrid and electric vehicles, since automobiles are the largest contributor to greenhouse gas emissions? I'd like to see more infrastructure like charging stations for electric cars or subsidies for companies like Tesla who are putting out quality production electric vehicles. It seems like that would be the direction to go.
Matt, thanks for the call. Professor?
Yes, Matt raises a good question. I mentioned with regard to the existing coal-fired power plants that states will have a great deal of discretion in how they meet the new standards for reducing greenhouse gas emissions. And one of those options is exactly what Matt mentions, which is to further develop clean or renewable energy sources, and then a state would get credit for that, which would mean they'd have to put less pressure on reducing the coal-fired power plants. That is, they look at other greenhouse-reducing greenhouse gas reducing technologies, and certainly reliance on electric cars would be one of those. But you know, let's remember too that if you are wealthy enough to afford a Tesla, so electric cars sound great, but you have to produce the electricity in some fashion. And if you're producing electricity by burning coal, it isn't a great environmental boon. And in the parts of the country, such as the Pacific Northwest, where electricity is produced from hydroelectric power, you know, that works out pretty well. In the Midwest, electric cars are going to be, right now, reliant heavily on coal-producing power plants. And so it's there's a limit to the effectiveness. But EPA administers dozens of different laws, and right now we're talking about the Clean Air Act and the impact of coal-burning power plants. There are many other ways, as I've mentioned, that we can reduce greenhouse gas emissions, and that is by developing a variety of energy technologies and certainly finding ways to promote use of non-fossil fuels in our transportation sector, particularly in individual cars and trucks and buses and airplanes, through biofuels and electricity and all of that should be pursued. The coal-burning power plants is the focus right now of the two EPA rules. And as I mentioned, the one that has been 20 years in the development, the mercury and air toxics rule, which also will make it very hard for old coal-fired power plants to continue.
All right. We need to take, speaking of continuing, the program continues with news in about 30 seconds. We'll be back with more with Professor Kraft and your calls and questions, emails, Facebook posts, and whatnot in just a few moments. We're talking about the end of the road for coal-fired power plants. Is it? You can vote in our online poll. Go to WPR.org and navigate your way to the Joy Cardine page. I'm John Munson, in for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This week's big question: should coal continue to play a significant part in the nation's future energy plans? I'm John Munson, in for Joy Cardine on the Ideas Network. Michael Kraft is with me. He's Professor Emeritus of Public and Environmental Affairs at UW-Green Bay. We're discussing the future of coal-fired power plants this hour, and it's not looking good for coal anyway. Might be better from another perspective, however. Lots of winners and losers in this thing. We want to hear from you at 800-642-1234 with your comments and questions. You can also send an email or find us on Facebook. But please vote in the big question poll. If you go to WPR.org/joy, look over on the right-hand side, there'll be a poll there, and the big question is, should coal continue to play a significant part of the nation's future energy plans? We'll tabulate the votes and announce the totals at the end of the hour. The other thing we're going to do late in the hour is we'll have our sound-off segment. You'll have a chance to sound off on the big question, 30 seconds to state your opinion one way or the other. Okay, in the meantime, Professor, we talked about some of the new technologies that would be involved in the future of coal-fired power plants. I guess when we take a look at the current technology that would be available to replace coal in terms of generating power in the United States, and it's regional. So when we say a national total, I mean, there are some places, as you pointed out, where it's closer to 90% or even more.
Right.
As a practical matter, does the technology exist today to replace that power generation with something that would be significantly cleaner by the time that we have to retire these plants?
Well, the easiest answer to that question is to say, yes, we have nuclear technologies. There are at least four new nuclear plants under construction right now in the South, and those are the first plants in something like 30 years. And if we're talking about large, centralized electricity-generating technologies, about the only thing other than natural gas that we've already talked about to replace coal would be nuclear power plants. But the reason why nuclear has not been in the picture much for the last 30 years and why we have, in fact, lost about, four new ones are under construction. We've lost four plants as well around the country, including the one in Wisconsin, because some of the older plants are no longer competitive with natural gas. But, yes, so we have that technology. If a state chose to go more heavily towards nuclear to replace coal plants, that could certainly be a possibility. This is also a time, as I've mentioned a few times now, where the nation and the states need to invest in new energy technologies to improve the technologies we have so that we're not limited to say, oh, it's either coal or it's nuclear or it's natural gas. No matter what source we pick, somebody will say, well, natural gas involves fracking, which involves frac sand, which involves possible groundwater contamination, and so on. Nuclear power is great, except it produces high-level radioactive waste, or it poses a danger of radiation, a la Fukushima. So I don't think we're going to find a magic technology that gives us all the power we want with no side effects, but it's important to have a balanced source of energy. And let's bear in mind also, we can help whatever technologies we're talking about. One way to help is to reduce our demand. You know, as has long been stated, if we use less electricity, that's the same as generating more electricity through any one of these technologies. So we could do a lot to reduce our wastage of energy, for example, by using more efficient light bulbs, by improving insulation in our home, so that when we turn on lights or heat and cool the homes, we're not wasting so much electricity. So in many ways, we need to rethink the way we use energy, conserve energy, find ways to increase efficiency, as well as look at new major sources of power, such as nuclear energy.
Well, I mean, we that's been a theme for, gosh, forever, seemingly.
Yeah,
Let's
time.
We need to yeah. reduce it. And we do have more efficient appliances, but we have more
Absolutely.
Of them.
Absolutely, yeah.
And we
yeah.
all have
well,
and we have personal computers, and we have laptops, and we have TVs in every room, and my goodness, we're just using more and more electricity.
Yes, and that's part of the problem. I mean, I'm not saying people should give up their laptop computers or their tablets, but it's important to bear in mind that as we develop new technologies, we also think about how those technologies can create more efficient appliances. As you noted, so refrigerators, washers, dryers, automobiles are all much more efficient than they used to be. There's some new EPA mileage requirements coming into effect in 2016 and then especially in 2025 that will greatly improve auto fuel efficiency, which means we burn less gas, we produce fewer greenhouse gases. So as technologies improve, as we improve our efficiency, that all will help. And in the meantime, we can certainly be looking at new technologies that offer some promise. Maybe, as you suggested, clean coal technologies will work out and be economically viable. And certainly there ought to be some experimental projects to see if we can't make a go of that.
Let's take a call from Tim in Whitewater next. Tim, good morning.
Yeah, good morning. Very good subject. We've got a situation in this state that I've always wondered why we don't look at more. There's a lot of large-scale dairy and hog and some poultry operations where there's methane gas. And we subsidize the wind and solar, which don't seem to be all that efficient without subsidization. And I'm wondering why we don't put more focus on recovery of methane gas with methane digesters when it solves two problems, creates more energy, and deals with a waste situation. But that doesn't seem as sexy as all the, you know, the wind and solar. And that's my take on it. I wanted a reaction on that because I think it's an area that we ought to be looking at because it solves two problems.
Tim, thanks for the call. Professor, what about methane capture?
Well, certainly. You know, methane is essentially natural gas. And so any way we can not just vent methane to the air, but rather turn it into a productive source of energy would be a good thing. But Tim was asking particularly about why don't we subsidize this. I'm not sure what the current economics of the situation are, and it may be that this would be up to each state to decide how much it wants to further the methane capture. We, of course, do that with landfills. We do it with some animal waste products, that is, we have plants that convert waste products and capture the methane. So, you know, from my perspective, and as the president has said many times, all of the above, that is, use all the sources of energy we can. Every source has some contribution to make, and that is absolutely true of so-called waste gases like methane. We should not be ventilating. Methane is a greenhouse gas. We should not be venting it to the air in any case. One of the real limitations of natural gas fracking is methane leaks from the pipes, which can easily add up to quite a lot that makes natural gas fracturing not such a good deal environmentally. So by all means, we ought to do what we can to not waste energy that we are now wasting by venting it to the air if there's some way to capture it and use it. And if the state needs to provide some subsidy to do that, as Tim was suggesting, we subsidize wind and solar. And I would say we subsidize coal and natural gas and oil and nuclear. Every source of energy is subsidized. And it's rather hard to compare them because the subsidies are not so open and, you know, right on top. They're buried in the tax code and various other public laws. But there's hardly any source of energy we use that has not at some point had a substantial federal or state subsidy.
Let's go to Jacob in Burlington next. Jacob, good morning.
Good morning. I'm wondering if there's any talk or the possibility from a political angle of governments forcing power companies who are a monopoly in a given region to support, fund, finance, install, maintain residential alternative energy systems. For example, I mean, I'm driving in Milwaukee at this point looking at all these south-facing roofs that would be great sites for solar panels. And right now, utility companies put a hurdle up to individuals installing that and tying that into the grid. Couldn't government force We Energies, for example, in Milwaukee, in my area, to support that? They could even make money on the installation, maintenance, whatever of it, but do it on the local level and decentralize this system.
I think the short answer to Jacob's question is yes, and there are states like California that do that already. California has perhaps the most stringent goal in the country for reliance on renewable energy in the future, and the California Energy Commission, I would urge the listeners to go to the California Energy Commission website to see what that state is doing. There is no state that competes with California in terms of rooftop solar systems, and one way California does this is to essentially make it easier for people to develop solar and alternative energy systems and to work through the state regulations and the power companies to make sure that these developments occur. And partly that's because the state is absolutely committed, more than any other state in the country, to reducing greenhouse gas emissions. It has an operational cap and trade program that the federal government cannot adopt through Congress. So, you know, we have 50 state governments, and they're all a little bit different in how they approach energy. And
yeah, there are some places where you actually pay a penalty to your power company for having a solar panel.
Yeah, and that's because and there have been proposals like that in states like Arizona recently because the existing power companies do not want the competition. But as I say, that's a state decision, and the states could certainly make sure that doesn't happen and to allow people to develop alternative energy sources and then to promote a diversification of the energy system rather than to allow a kind of monopoly by the state energy producers to continue. But these are state public policy decisions. It's up to people to make some noise about that if they want to see a different future.
800-642-1234. In just a little bit, we'll be going to our sound-off segment where you get to have 30 seconds to give us your opinion on today's big question, which is, should coal continue to play a significant part in the nation's future energy plans? You can vote on the Joy Cardeen page on WPR.org/joy, and then we'll give you a chance to sound off. Right now, though, we're going to take a call from Greg in Watertown. Greg, good morning.
Good morning. I think whatever type of energy we choose, we have to take its full ecological footprint into consideration. Where is the material being mined from? What type of destruction happens at that point? And then the whole environmental footprint of the digestion of the material. But I wanted to suggest two types of energy. One would be biomass, because biomass can be grown in a restorative manner. It could be grown in a perennial polyculture, permaculturally, which would actually be good for the environment. And if only burned down to charcoal through gasification, we can actually have a carbon negative energy source. And the other one I'd like the professor to talk about is WAMSR nuclear reactors, waste-annihilating molten salt reactors that actually are capable of consuming the waste from our current nuclear power sites. And because instead of using water as a heat transfer mechanism, it uses molten salt, which does not have the capacity to vaporize and blow up like Fukushima did. So some comments on those, please.
Greg, thanks for the call. A lot to chew on there, Professor.
Yes. Well, let me say, I won't speak to all the questions Greg raises, but I'm not competent to speak about the law. But I mentioned there are those who favor fusion nuclear power, and Greg's quite right. There are some new fission nuclear technologies that have been talked about and experimented with in recent years, and that would be better than existing plants. There are many types of plants that could be built that would be cleaner, safer, cheaper to operate. But in particular, he mentions biomass. I think for a state like Wisconsin and for other agricultural states, biomass represents a good alternative. I'm not sure whether any of these are going to replace large coal-fired power plants anytime soon, but if you, you know, if we look ahead 20, 30, 40 years, we could have a very decentralized, multifaceted energy system rather than just a series of very large power plants and centralized networks. And Gray's quite right. When, you know, any, and I noted this earlier, any energy source we consider, whether it's nuclear, coal, natural gas, wind, or solar, everything has an ecological footprint. And insofar as we can measure that footprint, we want to minimize it. We want to consider the life cycle costs, the cost of building a plant, producing electricity, dealing with the waste product. You know, historically, we haven't done a very good job of considering energy in this kind of comprehensive and integrated fashion. And I think Greg's quite right. In the future, we're going to have to think more ecologically and holistically about energy. You know, in all of this picture, coal does not fare very well because we haven't counted many of its costs. And most certainly what the EPA is trying to do is saying one of those costs is greenhouse gas emissions. You know, coal-fired power plants are one of the biggest emitters of greenhouse gases. And so the focus on greenhouse gas emission reduction is in part what is driving this. And as I noted earlier, also the mercury and other air toxic emissions. So in that sense, in answer to your larger question, coal-fired power plants, particularly the older, inefficient ones, are going away. And the question remains, what are we going to replace them with? You know, what's going to be better in the next 10 years, the next 20 years, and then beyond that?
Well, I guess it's kind of like a famous philosopher once said, there ain't no such thing as a free lunch.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, okay. Professor, thanks so much for spending this hour with us. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Michael Kraft is Professor Emeritus of Public and Environmental Affairs at UW Green Bay. We're going to continue with our big question in just a moment. You'll have a chance to sound off. You'll have 30 seconds to give us your thoughts on today's big question. Should coal continue to play a significant part in the nation's future energy plans? You can go to the Joy Cardine Show page on WPR.org/joy and vote in our poll. And then call us at 800-642-1234 and register your views that way. Share with the rest of us. 800-642-1234. You'll have 30 seconds to sound off on today's big question. Once again, the big question, should coal continue to play a significant part in the nation's future energy plans? That'll be, we'll continue with that in just a moment. I'm John Munson in for Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Today's big question, should coal continue to play a significant part of the nation's future energy plans? You'll have 30 seconds to sound off between now and the end of the hour. We'll start with Sarah in Milwaukee. Sarah, good morning.
Good morning. No, I think coal needs to go. It's dirty burning it. It's dirty mining it. You have to haul it on boats, and it's dirty to haul it. And I just think there's better alternatives. There's cleaner alternatives. And whatever happened to burning like the grease from the restaurants and cars, that was big for a while, and then it just died. So why can't we bring something like that back?
Good question. Sarah, thank you. Let's go to Tom in Oconto next. Tom, good morning.
Good morning. Yes, to coal. Let's keep it around. The UN IPCC report this year confirms that there has been no warming of the planet for the last 17 years. We haven't had any kind of coverage of that issue, but that's their own report. They're the Bible. And we also have had we've had the founder of Greenpeace come out recently and just say it's all been for grant money. This is why people always use the words global warming and everything that they do. Otherwise, they don't get grant money, and that's It's all the money in this thing, right. And that's the whole global warming.
We've got you down as yes. Let's go to Buck in Johnson Creek. Buck, good morning.
Hi. I would say no to coal, and a perfect example is Duke Energy, where they have 33 coal ash pits that are contaminating the groundwater. And when the contamination reaches the barriers that are acceptable, they move the barriers. You're not paying the real cost. And now the Republican legislature unknowingly granted them where they don't have to be responsible for the cleanup as they contaminate the Dan River and like 70 miles of the Dan River. Who's going to pay for that?
All right, Buck, we got to let you go. And Robert in Milwaukee, you're next.
About the coal, dirty to mine and very expensive to clean off gases. I just stumbled at Europe, at Germany, and I found out that the solar panel now have efficiency 34% and soon is going to be compatible at last with normal energy, and they are worrying about nuclear and those two. That means is a challenge.
All right, Robert, thanks for your call. Doug in Verona.
I go with no and several different reasons, but let's ship all that good coal over to China like we want to do with our oil and then also set up a program for those poor miners. And I realize they lived off the company store for many years before getting good wages, but get programs together so that they can train to go into some other fields. Just
all right.
Let them high and dry. Thank you.
We got it. Okay. And Jim in Duran. Jim, good morning.
Yes, I think that we should keep our coal-fired plants until we get alternative sources. I think hydroelectric is a very good way to go. Jim Falls Hydro Plant would be a great example where they took an old facility, increased its efficiency from 50 to over 90%. I think we need to be looking at it. There's been a study done for three more dams on the Chippewa River. I think we need to look at for alternative sources.
Okay, Jim, thanks a lot. Carlos in Madison, you're next. Carlos, good morning.
Hi. Good morning. I would say definitely not. It takes too much energy to extract coal as it is. It is not a clean energy source, and we should definitely spend more time and a little bit more money into researching alternative energy sources, but more importantly, educating people on how they can reduce their carbon and their energy footprint.
All right, Carlos, we have it, and thank you for that. Let's go to line three next. Randy in Middleton.
Good morning. I say yes, because we're not ready to switch over to solar energy. Companies have spent literally billions learning how to scrub their emissions. I almost feel like that would be going to waste. That's the cleanest we can get.
All right, Randy, thanks a lot. We're going to have to let it go. Let's see, our mini call-in poll is a 5-no, 3-yes online poll. 58% say no. 29% say yes, 11% aren't sure. Thanks for registering your opinions on today's big question. Bill Martin's produced this hour, programming on air production by Robin Cherry, and Christy Taylor did her usual great job of directing. I'm John Munson in for Joy Cardine. More to come on the Ideas Network as we talk education after 8 o'clock this morning. And we'll also be getting your views on that. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.